I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the Operating Engineers, Local 139, Madison Teamsters, Local 695, Madison Firefighters, Local 311, and Madison Teachers Incorporated. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation with us. John, when I thought we had a new president, I thought we could exhale, but it appears as though we can't. It has been a very normal week, but the attack on democracy is coming from all directions when it comes to Republicans, because they figured out they can't really win the war of ideas because they don't have any.
I think that's, but they actually have some ideas, Sly. I think you're being a little unfair to them. You know, apparently there's like a conspiracy going on. And this guy named Q has got all the details on it.
Ah, well, there is that. Well, here, let me play this from NBC.
Tonight, more Democrats denouncing freshman Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's promoted false QAnon conspiracy theories. Cori Bush today announcing she's moving her House office away from Greene's office, quote, for my team's safety, after she says a maskless Greene berated her in a hallway. Greene saying Bush started it, posting this video from earlier this month.
Stop being a hypocrite. Yeah, this is how it is here now. This is how it is.
Most Republicans have yet to condemn Greene for her controversial comments, even after a recently uncovered Facebook post from 2018 that's since been deleted. In it, Greene touted a false anti-Semitic conspiracy, claiming lasers from space funded by a Jewish financier and others ignited the deadliest California wildfire. Greene tonight in a statement writing, every attack, every lie, every smear strengthens my base of support. I will never back down. It comes amid another skirmish in the post-Trump divide among Republicans. One of the former president's fiercest allies, Matt Gaetz of Florida, hosting a rally outside Wyoming's state capitol.
You can send Liz Cheney home.
Singling out his party's third highest ranking House leader for voting to impeach Mr. Trump.
You can help me break a corrupt system. You can send a representative who actually represents you.
Gaetz's trip in defiance of top House Republican Kevin McCarthy, who this week urged his colleagues to stop attacking one another and focus on Democrats.
Also tonight, multiple sources say that former President Trump is stewing about the 10 House Republicans who voted to impeach him and talking about getting involved in primary races to defeat them. Lester?
He's going to be a president.
So could Kevin McCarthy be more pathetic?
Nah. But remember, he was always the pathetic one. Remember that he was, I'm pretty sure, you know, he was one of the young guns with Paul Ryan and Eric Cantor. And you know, it's like Cantor was, you know, he was smart and you know, hustling to make it happen. He may not have liked him, and he ultimately got beaten in his primary, but he was there was stuff going on there. There was no question of that. And Ryan, well, at least he was what a dumb person thinks a smart person sounds like. But even dumb people knew that Kevin McCarthy was.
Kevin McCarthy is almost like a Bakersfield version of Eric Trump.
Ooh, no. He doesn't have Trump's style.
I don't know if Eric Trump has much style.
But you know what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's a style that you want to emulate, but
Here's the local coverage of Matt Gaetz in Cheyenne the other day, okay?
Hundreds gathered at our state capitol today for Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz's visit. Gaetz continued his criticism of Congresswoman Liz Cheney.
I've been here for about an hour, and I feel like I already know the place a lot better than your misguided representative, Liz Cheney.
Gates was met with praise throughout his speech, challenging Cheney on a number of issues and encouraging us to vote her out when the time comes. Gates' message was echoed by former President Donald Trump's son, who called in during the gathering. The majority attending supported Gates' message, but not every Wyomingite shared the same views. When asked what factors make a trip like this successful, Gates had this to say.
I'm here to be the masthead for the America First movement going forward. And what I see is energy and positivity and love of country and patriotism in gatherings like this. And I look forward to having a lot more of them around the country.
The gathering stayed peaceful throughout its entirety. And although Congresswoman Cheney was not available this week for an interview, we're hopeful we can speak with her next week.
Although the mining industry is quite vocal in their support for Liz Cheney. They are. That was the next story on the mining industry coming to her defense.
So. I bet they did. Here's the, and you know, Wyomingites will be torn on that one. But here's the interesting part of that. I hope that Trump's kid doesn't tell Trump that Gates says he's now the masthead.
The masthead, yeah.
Because isn't that Trump?
And, well, Gates inferred that he was going to be traveling around all over the country.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like somebody's running for president.
It does.
24, doesn't it? But the funny part is, and this is sort of the wonder of being in a situation where Liz Cheney is the good player, that there is sort of a humor to Matt Gaetz saying that you know, they're going to, like, send Liz Cheney home. Because Liz Cheney is home.
In Virginia.
When she works in Washington and lives in Virginia. If she got sent home to Wyoming, she would have no idea where she was.
Come on now. Her kids are in rodeos. So
they've seen rodeos.
Yeah. No.
So her dad was, you know, like he's from Nebraska. Right? You know, the joke in Wyoming was when Dick Cheney showed up, like, wearing a cowboy hat and stuff like that. There's always, like, a price tag hanging from the back.
Well, Nebraska, they are neighbors. So this was the reaction from John Meacham on where the Republican Party is today. And I thought he came up with a pretty good answer.
John Meacham, how is it that the party of Margaret Chase Smith is now the party of Marjorie Taylor Greene? And with each new day, each new big dig into her social media, we learn something else. Just in the last 24 hours, she believes it was a Jewish-funded space laser that started the 2018 wildfire, the worst in California history, because it was trying to apparently defoliate for high-speed rail, which is, as far as I know, how you go about such a thing. I know we've had some doozies, John, but have we ever had an elective representative in Congress this disconnected from reality? That's a high bar.
I don't think so. And I must say, as an Episcopalian, I'm a little concerned that we don't have a high-speed laser. So I'm going to talk to the presiding bishop about that when I can. Well, exactly. You know, and the Presbyterians had one to be predestined. So we could go on. But mercifully, we won't. The answer to your question is that the party of Margaret Chase Smith was also the party of Joe McCarthy. And there is a strain in the Republican Party that goes back to the end of the Second World War, born in the paranoia and the fear, some real fears, about communism. The sense that FDR had sold us out at Yalta was kind of the Pearl Harbor, to mix my metaphors, of right-wing conspiracy thinking. You saw it move through the John Birch Society, and you've now seen it flower anew in a new century. And I think, not to be overly grand about it, but, you know, Abraham Lincoln had to arbitrate between slavery and freedom. Franklin Roosevelt had to deal with capital and labor. Joe Biden is basically confronting an America where he has to find a way for reality to triumph over fantasy. And I think that that's a remarkable challenge for anybody. To go to what John was saying, I think my own view of the way to do it is to produce real results for people, however you have to do it, and then argue to that percentage of the country that's reachable, right? I mean, because there were 34% of the country, according to the Washington Post, in 1955, still approved of Joe McCarthy after he had been censured, right? So that's a pretty good number to think. 35% is probably not reachable. But of the 74 million people who voted for Trump, some number of those, presumably, are reachable by reason. And I think that has to be the focus, not just of the administration, but of citizens. Because I'm on a little campaign here to stop calling the country divided, because division suggests there are two equivalent camps that are at war with each other. I don't see that the Democratic Party and the center left are in any way equivalent in their reflexive opposition or their conspiracy thinking, as you allude to, as the right is. And so I would propose a test for every elected official, every citizen. And that is, do you believe Joe Biden is a legitimately elected and duly inaugurated president? And if you can say yes, then you have assented to a common conversation about the country. If you say no, then you are continuing to participate in a mendacious cult of personality that's about the acquisition of power and not the preservation of our democracy.
Thoughts?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Pretty good.
He also said that if Biden's going to succeed, he's actually got to improve people's lives immediately.
Right, that's the heart of it. I mean, there's two things in it that were really important. Number one, kind of, you win the debate right off the bat when you point out that the party of Margaret Chase Smith is also the party of Joe McCarthy, right? Because the fact is that both major parties, I want to emphasize it, both major parties have had their lunatics, right? And they're dangerous, awful players. You look at some of the segregationists, some of the people, you know, Mississippi sent to the U.S. Senate as Democrats, Theodore Bilbo, people like that, they were like scary, dangerous, awful people who were filled with conspiracy theories and spotted them on the floor of the Senate. And so each party's got its problems. The challenge that we've got is always, you know, whether you, are willing to challenge, you know, willing to push back against it, right? Willing to say, that's false. I'm not going there. I'm not playing games with that. And Biden's shown a real willingness to do that. Remember, he says his reason for running for president, or at least underpinned by what happened in Charlottesville in 2017, you know, his response to the both-siderism of Trump. So that's a good point right there, and valid, needs to be put forward. Biden's doing it right. But that second point, that in the end you win the debate by proving that government, I'm going to extend a little bit from what Meacham was saying there, proving that government can work. Because at the root of so much of the conservative, right-wing, Republican, you know, madness at this point is an argument that goes back to Ronald Reagan, right? That government's the enemy, government's the problem. And if government's the problem, right, then you go out and you create all these fantasies and all these theories about, you know, how you're going to solve everything, you know, through, like, you know, some sort of libertarian, you know, dream world. And then you start to extend beyond that into, well, the people that don't get that are somehow very, very dangerous, and somehow there's a conspiracy, and if we lose an election, it's all this awful stuff and blah, blah, blah. Government's gotten a very bad name in a lot of politics. You're not going to win everybody back by showing that government works, but you can win a tremendous number of people back by doing big things, making government, you know, a force for good and a force that actually gets stuff done and achieves stuff. And just to close the thought off, that's what Roosevelt did. If you want to find a time when there were a lot of conspiracy theories, you go back and you look at the papers from 1931, 1932, and if you want to find a lot of extremism, globally, of course, because you saw the rise of authoritarian movements and fascist movements around the world. But in the U.S., there was a lot of extremism, there was a lot of conspiracy theory, there was a lot of dangerous stuff going on. And yet in that moment, Roosevelt, first Democrat elected since 1916, comes in, shows government can work, gets reelected in 1936 with the biggest margin ever, the biggest victory ever in a presidential race, at least in modern times.
We'll take a break there. John Nichols from the Capital Times here at SliceOffice.com.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
The attorneys at Gingras, Thompson, and Wachs have had the honor of receiving numerous awards for their work both in and outside the courtroom. But just as important as receiving accolades for being skilled attorneys, it's equally important to give back to the community in which they live and work. If you want a personal attorney that can help you in so many different areas, they've got them. They're in Eau Claire, Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha. They're easy to reach. GTWLawyers.com. That's GTWLawyers.com.
We're back at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by Madison Computer Works, also Jeff's Guitar Clinic. All right, so in the first week of the Biden presidency, he signed a lot of executive orders. The elitists at the Washington Post and New York Times did not like that.
No.
They did not like that at all. But to be fair, let me ask the question that obviously Republicans have proven that they don't believe in democracy. They've exhibited in Wisconsin for the last 10 years. What they're trying in Arizona is unbelievable. Where is the line on executive orders?
No, the line is well drawn. It's not hard to figure out.
I know in some cases Congress has given presidents this authority, and then they don't like it when he uses it. But
that's right. That's right. The line is, but this has nothing to do with the line. It's actually very well drawn. An executive order, you know, Trump tried it on one of his, you know, with some of the stuff with the wall. But the fact of the matter is, an executive order can't move money around. It doesn't really move money. It's about policy. It's about, you know, focus and what you can accomplish or can't accomplish by, you know, kind of being on the right side of history. And that's really good, right? You may stop persecuting people, as Biden has tried to do. You may put your focus on a public health measure, wearing masks on airplanes, stuff like that, something they should have done better part of a year ago. But at the end of the day with executive orders, they don't trump Congress. You can't, you know, suddenly create $20 billion or $100 billion. And so they're very limited, actually. I'm glad that Biden's using them. I think that it is appropriate. It's also a way to show that he's serious, the government's hitting the ground running, not going to be a spectator waiting for Congress to do something. And that's to the good. But at the end of the day, you know, all the hand-wringing by the Washington Post and the New York Times, places like that, you know, they don't need to worry too much. At the end of the day, for Biden to succeed, he's got to figure out how to make some kind of relationship with Congress work, and that is to get the coronavirus package, the relief package passed, to get an infrastructure package passed, to get immigration reform approved, to get labor law reform approved. You know, you can see the stuff that needs to be done, right? We know what has to happen in this country, and that won't happen via executive orders at the end of the day, not the big stuff.
So I can't read their minds, but do you think both those papers were taking that position, that posture, for their credit, for their supposed credibility? In other words, you think they did that to say, hey, look, we're criticizing a Democrat as well?
They may be. If they are, how useless, right? You know, what a pointless pointless exercise it is, because, of course, they're not going to win back any, you know, the QAnon folks aren't going to go, hey, you know, the Washington Post had a pretty reasonable editorial here.
You don't think Tom Tiffany is going to like the New York Times and Washington Post?
You know, if Tom Tiffany likes the New York Times and Washington Post, then there's a real problem, you know, in journalism in America. But the thing of it is this is the crisis of both siderism, right? And remember that most of our media struggled deep into Donald Trump's presidency to call him a liar, right? It was like, oh, should we be calling him a liar? He's the president. You know, isn't what the president says true just because the president says it? You know, or something like that. And it was very damaging. They should have started calling him a liar in 2015. It's similar with, you know, when on January 6th, it was fascinating because when the Capitol was under attack, you saw many media outlets struggling to say what it was, right? Is it a rally? You know, is this a demonstration? Are these protesters? They were like trying to figure out.
Well, some of them were. I mean,
yeah, admittedly, but I think the people who were literally, you know, beating police officers to death, maybe the term protester, you know, you might want to evolve beyond that. And maybe it's not really a rally. Maybe it is indeed a fascist riot.
Well, here's what Malcolm Nance, you know, security analyst for NBC, had to say.
There were likely assassination teams, what we would call a murder cell, within that group. And we're finding the FBI is charging people for that very conspiracy. They intended to go in, find and kill high-value personages like Nancy Pelosi and AOC. What we've seen happen is only the beginning of what will be a long-term series of insurrections.
That'll get your attention.
Seems to be worthy of note. You know, maybe you want to pause and take that in. You know, historically, when you get that kind of signal, it's a point at which you want to maybe readjust some of your priorities and some of your focus. And I don't know. I do not know if he's right. I respect that he's got knowledge and that he's worked in some of these areas. We'll see, you know, how much of a long-term issue there is. But clearly, there are people who plotted to attack the Capitol of the United States with the purpose of overturning the results of a presidential election. This was not just insurrection, you know, in some sort of vague way. And I think this is where a lot of our media, a lot of our political elites still struggle to kind of get the point of what happened on January 6th and kind of in the run-up to it, the aftermath. These were people who wanted to stop the counting of the results of an election that was going to remove their guy, right? Because he lost the election. And so this is a attempt to overthrow the elected government of the United States. You can't see it in any other way. That was the purpose of it, right? You had an election, you had a result, it was leading in a certain direction. These people wanted to stop that. If you don't treat it in that way, if you don't recognize it in that way, then you start to, you go soft, right? You know, well, maybe they're just have a disagreement here. No, this isn't a disagreement. This is, you know, the kind of, as Liz Cheney says, right? This is the ultimate betrayal, right? By a president, but also by his followers. And it's important to understand this didn't begin or end with Trump, and it hasn't begun or ended with Trump. The fact is that this, in recent days, Rand Paul went to the floor of the Senate and said, we've got to stop this impeachment trial. We've got to block this impeachment trial for Donald Trump on incitement of insurrection because it's unconstitutional. Now, that's a lie. It's not unconstitutional. There's absolutely no debate about that. It's totally constitutional. I wrote a book on this stuff. This is not hard stuff to figure out.
There's precedent.
But why did he say it?
Back up. I said there's precedent for this.
Oh, yeah. There's not only precedent, but it's also, if you literally look in the debates at the Constitutional Convention, 1787, they talked about this. They talked specifically about a president who might seek to extend his power, you know, abusing the office. And you know, they were very, very concerned about the threat of monarchy, right? They didn't want America, which had just, literally in their living memory, had just broken free from the British crown, to develop a presidency that might evolve into a monarchical threat to the republic. And so the Constitution is very carefully drawn in that regard. The impeachment power is clear on that. The original tenets are clear. And yet Rand Paul, who fancies himself as a constitutionalist, got up there and made this, you know, lunatic claim. And 45 members of the United States Senate, including Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, backed him up on this. Now, this is an important thing to understand because, you know, you say, well, this finished up on January 6th, horrible thing. Now we're going to find the wrongdoers, identify them, et cetera, et cetera. No, no. They are continuing this. They are saying that doing what Donald Trump did, you know, these actions that Donald Trump engaged in, which were clearly wrong, which are clearly impeachable, we don't want to hold him to account for that. We want to, you know, push that aside. That is, you know, just like fuel to the fire, right? That is saying to, you know, all these people who believe these conspiracy theories, all the madness out there, saying, yep, you know, you're right. Donald Trump is the victim here. He's being, you know, unfairly prosecuted, unconstitutionally, you know, held to account. This is really dangerous stuff, Sly. And that Ron Johnson and Rand Paul are engaged in this, Josh Hawley and others, right? This is something that we ought to all pause and recognize. If they continue this lie, this refusal to accept the reality of what happened on January 6th, we are going to continue to be facing ongoing threats, and they potentially could develop into something far more severe. So I'm not as much worried about Trump now, although I'm very much worried by him. I'm worried by the people who continue to mount defenses of Trump and where that leads us.
Well, the woman that saved Ron Johnson's seat in the U.S. Senate, Diane Hendricks, the owner of American Building Contract, whatever it is, ABC Building, gave $2,800 to Marjorie Taylor Greene in the Georgia congressional primary.
Yeah, so she was there. That's an interesting thing to point out, because remember that even some of the very, very conservative leaders in the House, folks who are big Trump defenders, tried to stop Greene from winning that primary. So that means what you're talking about, contributing to Greene in that primary, means that you kind of went around even the most right-wing leadership in the House and said, well, I want this woman in Congress.
And, of course, Mark Meadows helped her as well in the primary.
Well, Mark Meadows, let's just say when we pause and think about the enablers of the worst of what's happened in recent years, right, and just remember that it was Mark Meadows who moved a bunk in to, you know, rest at the side of Donald Trump when Donald Trump was being treated for COVID. I mean, he's the ultimate loyalist, the ultimate, you know, enabler of all this stuff. And frankly, fascinating story, just a quick one. When they found out that how effective masks were in fighting COVID-19, Trump's pollster came to the White House, as well as some other, you know, Republican strategists, met with Trump and said, you know, you could do a mask mandate. It would be very popular. It would even be popular among Republicans. It's a good idea. This is smart politics. It's also smart public health. It was Mark Meadows who intervened and said, told Trump, don't do that. Don't do that. It'll offend some of our base. So that's who Mark Meadows is.
Finally, after seeing a normal president with normal press conferences, as a progressive Catholic, I take great joy in having Joe Biden as president and looking over his left shoulder and seeing the beautiful picture of him and Pope Francis.
Yeah.
I find it reassuring because I know they both believe in compassion, which is, we sure need a lot of that right now. Brian Williams, a fellow Catholic, kind of summed things up for this first week at the end of his show last night.
By taking Frank's advice there, we thought we would leave you softly. It's been a week, hasn't it? For that matter, it's been a couple of years that we have witnessed here together. So in order to leave you softly on this Friday night, we thought it might be a good time to take stock of where we are and the return of normal. Tonight marks the end of Joe Biden's first full week in office. Not one American citizen that we're aware of has awakened and said to themselves while reaching for their phone, "Dear Lord, what has the president said or done now? Are we at war? Has Rudy stopped dripping?" Another thing, there were White House briefings every day this week. None of them a platform for lies or statements supporting the dear leader. None of the Biden children has been hired as advisor or counselor to the president. Dogs are back. Major and Champ Biden are exploring the 18-acre fenced-in yard. Of course, who's going to tell them they're about to be joined by a cat? The president today calmly took reporters' questions before boarding the helicopter. He yelled at no one, berated no one. And there was this. A wife kissing her husband goodbye. In this case, First Lady Dr. Jill Biden wishing the president a good flight as he took off to visit wounded service members at Walter Reed. All of it, the way the president used to look, the way the presidency used to look. Now, let's remember this was the week our government issued a bulletin warning us about the danger from our own fellow citizens. And we have a QAnon congresswoman out there who believes the massive 2018 California wildfire was caused by a Jewish space laser. But it turns out the work of the presidency can be done at lower volume. The anxiety that over the past 4 years had become America's leading export to the world, anxiety is coming down.
Let me ask you this. It's only been a week, but the starting point in which President Biden is, the signals he's sending, how would you compare them to the beginning signals of Presidents Clinton and Obama?
Tremendously better. Very significantly better. And this is not, you know, I've been critical of Clinton, less critical of Obama, but this is not about them. You know, and saying they got everything wrong. That's not the point. It is that we learn along the way, right? We recognize certain realities. And my sense is that Biden, who's been around Washington for a long time, a student of history and a student of politics, looked at what happened with Clinton, what happened with Obama, and determined that he was not going to make the same mistakes. And what are the mistakes? Number one mistake is to believe the deficit hawks, to say, as Clinton did, oh, you know, I had all these promises, but I can't really do it, right? I've got to limit my expectations. And Clinton really bought into that in a big way, and it damaged him. So many other of his policy moves damaged him, but that really damaged him. Number two is to be obsessively engaged with the idea of healing unity, you know, working across partisan lines, trying to find areas of compromise. And frankly, Obama really did try. He really did believe in a post-partisan possibility and was never rewarded for that by the Republicans. And so I think that with Biden, we're seeing both in the use of the executive orders as well as some of his statements. For instance, you know, yeah, I'd like to work with the Republicans, but if they don't give us this COVID package, we're going to try and pass it just with the Democrats, you know, accepting that they would do it just with Democratic votes. That's a recognition of reality. And you know what the interesting thing is? Biden, if he keeps this up, will be more successful in getting unity and cooperation across the aisle. And I'll tell you why. Because if you're strong and you start to actually do things, then the other side knows they're dealing with something that they can't constantly negotiate with, that they can't constantly push toward compromise and concession. And so Biden, if he keeps this up, could be a very successful president.
Finally, give me a minute's worth of your thoughts about the passing of Hank Aaron and what he meant to Wisconsin.
Well, first off, should we rename the stadium?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the starting point. And hopefully, you know, Miller Park or American Family Park or whatever name we've had, hopefully all the big money people and whatever can just accept that this should be Hank Aaron Stadium, Hammering Hank Aaron Stadium. And that's a good starting point. What he meant to Wisconsin is, you know, the interesting thing is the best stories about Aaron are not from Milwaukee. They're from Eau Claire. And when he was a young player going up to Eau Claire, and how he was, how he recalled being welcome there and being, you know, kind of becoming a real part of that community. And it reflects well on Wisconsin. It's stories that we like to tell because we're not always perfect and we make plenty of mistakes and have plenty of bad history. But his engagement with Wisconsin, his presence here, brought out a lot of the best in this state. And it was undoubtedly because he was the best. He was a remarkably skilled, remarkably talented, remarkably dignified figure in the history of this state. And so his passing is a big deal, and there's been a lot of reflection on it, and I think it's all appropriate. But I do think for reasons having to do with him and even beyond him, I think that renaming of Miller Park or American Family Park or whatever it's called.
American Family Field, yeah.
Yeah, whatever it's called this week, for Hank Aaron would be absolutely appropriate and, frankly, healthy, good for this state.
Well, he was my hero as a kid, and I got to meet him the first day the Milwaukee Brewers switched to the National League on the field at County Stadium. And, you know, he could not have been nicer, more genuine, more dignified, more willing to spend time. And, you know, I'm not awestruck by many people, but that was a pretty remarkable moment.
I think we're all awestruck by Hank Aaron, though. I think everybody was. And again, have you heard some of those stories out of Eau Claire?
Yeah, they're pretty remarkable. Yeah.
They're incredible. Yeah. I mean, it's both his stories and the stories of people who were there. And it's a reminder of something good about Wisconsin. As imperfect as we may be, historically this state has had at least some good examples of trying to be better in the past, of aspiring to something higher and better. And I think Hank Aaron brought a lot of that out. But his humanity, his decency, his frankly good politics, and that's a subtle part of him. All of that is something worthy of remembering, and it's very interesting. You know, my daughter, who's 17, never came up in the Hank Aaron, you know, that milieu, that world was not, you know, it's not something that she was, you know, never intersected with. But it was wonderful to be able to tell her about Hank Aaron, right? And to keep those stories going, to carry him forward. Because, you know, the story of Hank Aaron is really a story about America and Wisconsin at a critical point in its history, getting excited about an incredible athlete achieving incredible things.
John Nichols from the Capital Times, thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.